We have today a public hearing scheduled on Senate Bill 1077, and I will open a public hearing on that bill.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Senate Bill 1077A is a bill that establishes a credit against personal income taxes for property taxes paid by qualified elderly owner-occupants of their homes. Qualified owners must be at least 75 years of age with household income that does not exceed $25,000. The amount of the credit can be claimed in any 1 year, but can be claimed in any 1 year, cannot exceed the lesser of $300, the amount of property tax that exceeds 6.5% of the household's adjusted income, or the household's income tax liability. The latter limitation is because the credit is not refundable. However, this particular bill has carry forward provisions. So if you can't use the entire, if you should get a credit for up to $300, but your tax liability is perhaps $100, you'd be able to carry the $200 forward to the next year. As background, I just very briefly wanted to give you some background. I won't describe it all here, but Oregon has a 30-year history of providing some property tax relief to both homeowners and renters, but the program that was enacted in 1973 was phased out in 1990. At that point, it served 31,000 households that received $9.1 million a year in 1990. It also had a property tax relief program that was phased out. Currently, it has two programs that serve the needs of qualified income, qualified seniors. The first is the ERA, Elderly Rental Assistance Program. This program is eligible to the head of household who's at least 58 years of old, and whose household income is $10,000 or less, and whose rent exceeds 20% of household income. They receive anywhere from between $100 to $2,100 per year out of general fund. Roughly 3,300 households receive an average of $467, and the general fund expenditure last year was about $1.5 million. We all are very aware of the senior deferral property program. Seniors are able to defer their taxes. This program has been enacted since 1963, and the average amount deferred is about $1,500 per year. The outstanding balance is about $116 million. Seniors repay their taxes, and currently they repay more each year than has to be paid out of the general fund. So this program sort of pays for itself, plus the deferrals get the seniors have to pay at 6% rate, interest rate on those deferrals. The revenue impact that on this particular bill is zero in the first 2007 biennium because of the delayed effective date of the bill, which begins tax year beginning after January 1, 2009. So the first impact on the bill is in 2009-11, and it's roughly $2.4 million at that point in time.
Thank you. This bill comes to us from Senator Berger, who is here to tell us about it today. Welcome.
For the record, I am Joanne Berger. I am the senator from District 5, the coast of Oregon. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, I don't know when I have had a bill since my tenure in the legislature that has affected as few people but has meant as much to those that it affects as 1077A. The low-income seniors, as we've all been hearing about, are just facing an increasing problem with their income and being able to stretch their money to be able to just provide themselves not with a high quality of life, but just with the necessities of life. And that involves, as many of you know, the medications that they need and being able to buy the food that they need off of nutrients. We are the fourth oldest state in the nation. We are going to be increasingly getting more and more seniors. So this isn't an issue that's going to go away. But I do believe that what we're looking at today is something for the poorest of the poor and the oldest of the elderly. And I believe that they are the most vulnerable population. You have before you my testimony, Madam Chair, and I'm not going to read word for word, certainly, for you, but I want to just hit some highlights for you. This is going to provide the relief for low-income seniors that are struggling. It provides, as you've been told, an income tax credit up to $300 to Oregon seniors over the age of 75 who earn less than $25,000 a year in household income. The assistance is for people that own their own homes. People who live in their homes are the most comfortable, and they live longer. We have provided rental relief, but we don't do anything for people that live in their homes. At the same time, we're working very hard on Oregon Project Independence so that the state can help people live in their homes. And so I think we need to try to take a kind of the look of the bird in the tree at this whole situation, that if we're going to believe that people are healthier, require less medical care in their homes, live longer, have a better quality of life, and that we are encouraging them through Oregon Project Independence, we need to look at Senate Bill 1077, because I believe that it is going to assist seniors in a way that many of us may find hard to understand. For instance, if a senior would benefit by as much as $80 in this particular bill, that can mean the difference in paying their electricity bill. I know that I have had social workers tell me that they go into a home, it's warm, and when they leave, they find out from other family members that the elderly person turns off the heat after they've left so that they don't have to have the high expense. Those that might make benefit as much as $300, then that can be the difference in their medication, a tremendous difference. Rather than cutting pills in half, hoping that it will help the blood pressure problem that they have, they would be able to buy the prescription as it's supposed to be. And so I think it just is very rare that we have an opportunity to pass a bill that has such a low fiscal impact that really provides the help for so many. This bill will help about 26,000 Oregonians, and I think of those 26,000, they are our 26,000 most needy. And so with that, Senator Burdick, we have some other people that would like to testify on the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Berger. Are there any questions? Senator Atkins.
Thank you. A couple, Madam Chair.
Okay, please.
Thank you. Senator, I was reading through the bill. These are owner-occupied dwellings?
Right.
Okay, so rental, someone that rents a dwelling unit, a senior citizen that rents a home or a dwelling unit wouldn't qualify?
If they rent their own home, you mean?
No,
there's nothing in Senate Bill 1077 that takes care of renters.
Okay. Another question. I don't see anything in here that mentions a mobile home park or something like that where someone would... Is that in there?
It would apply. Let me be sure with my staff person here that's correct. But I certainly would say yes.
Mary,
that
do
it does
you want to
apply.
Put something on the record?
Because they own their own home.
Right.
They pay rental space, but they own their own home.
Okay. There's a method to my questions. The reason I'm so interested in this is in 1999 I ran a real similar bill, and senior property tax rebate is what I was trying to do, and it was the same point. I had and remain to this day, I have a tremendous amount of senior citizens who would qualify as low income, especially in the mobile home park world. where they own their home, but they don't own the land underneath the underneath it. Mm-hmm. And as things, you know, go up, as a rental or a lease payment would go up, their amount for medication would go down.
That's exactly right.
That's the issue. At the time, I had a very candid conversation with Phil Kiesling about the senior property tax deferral system. Mm-hmm. How does your bill get meshed with that?
Well, it would not. Mary, would you like to go back over that? I think you touched on that in your presentation, however.
Yes, Senator Berger, thank you, Chair Burdick. The senior deferral, at the time the choice is made, the senior has a choice of paying his taxes, his income taxes, at which point he can defer his property taxes, or he has the option of selecting the $300, up to $300 credit. There is no meshing of the two, let's say.
And so that $300 credit is not one time, it's annual. Okay. One last comment. That's brilliant. And the reason why that's so brilliant is keeping that option alive annually is the very thing I learned in 1999 that accomplished two things. One is it kept the fiscal down. Two, and Senator Virgil is correct, this is a very, very important issue that affects perhaps not a lot of people. And somewhere in this building of numbers and statistics, 26,000 sounds like a lot. I would be surprised if we got 26,000 folks who would qualify to take advantage of it. But why I just was really interested to hear the bill today is that there's half that, where this is the difference between heat and medication. And in your testimony, Senator, you mentioned Oregon Project Independence. For years in Southern Oregon, which is very similar economically to your district, we've tried to marry the two concepts together, because the person who lives in their home is more healthy, has in many cases a lot of pride and a lot of more active, I should say, mm-hmm. and it costs considerably less to us. Not only the fact that it's also dignity. I have a lot of very, very proud people who would rather live on their own and have done wonderful things for our country. And this is, so anyway, I can gush at length, but I thank you. And that last comment, I think, is the real key to this bill's success.
Senator Atkinson, I thank you for those comments. I fully agree with you. And I believe that, I really believe that those of us who are healthy and well and in not need of qualifying for this kind of thing need to take to heart the numbers of people in Oregon who are living in a way of life that we would not want them to live, and yet they are proud, and any help that we can give them. I'm very distressed to know that people are cutting off heat in the dead of winter that are being reported by social agencies. Also, another thing, this doesn't go into effect until the 09-11 budget cycle. I know it's going to be impacted today by the problem that we face today, and that's a shame, because I believe that if we could get this bill through this process, it would really help the people that it is intended to help, the poorest of the poor and the oldest of the elderly. So if there are no other questions, Chair Burdick, I will step aside and let others help with this bill.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, may I make one other comment real quick? Here's the other thing that's very unique about this bill as a concept, and that is where Senator Verger represents and myself, and to some degree Senator Morris, we have a lot of small towns that might vanish if we don't do something to keep people in their homes. One of my all-time favorite communities is Rogue River, which is where I came to learn about this issue. And Rogue River is a small town. Many of you only heard of the river, not the town of Rogue River. Or I can think of quite a few small towns in your district up in the hills that if we don't do something, some kind of incentive to keep people in their homes, those little towns could go away. Where do my relatives live up in your district? Up the Coos River? Allegheny.
Allegheny.
I'm thinking of Allegheny.
We have Allegheny and Powers. And,
right.
And I have Toledo, which is a little bit larger town, but we have a lot of little communities that surround those small communities.
Thank you. Okay, Rick Bennett and Verna Porter are both signed up to support this bill. Welcome.
Adam, appreciate
it. All right, very good.
No.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. Just a few remarks on the bill. I think we all understand that the mainstay of local taxation is the property tax, and the revenue from that tax funds vital services such as education, fire and police, health services, parks and recreation. But I think it's also important to remember that property tax is often considered a regressive tax for seniors, and it can be the single most burdensome tax for many low-income seniors. The tax does not take into account the ability to pay, except where a circuit breaker program, similar to what is proposed here in Senate Bill 1077, if they're available. Rather, the tax is based on property values and property tax rates that may have escalated significantly over the decades that seniors have owned their homes, and therefore various tax relief programs, homestead exemptions, circuit breakers, or deferral programs are valid means for reducing the tax burden for people with limited or moderate income. AARP has been very supportive of the state's deferral program. I think that's good policy. However, I would mention that some of the research that we've done also indicates that of the three types of programs that are utilized for property tax relief, that the deferral program is often the least popular with our members because of the lien that's placed against the property. As already indicated, property tax burdens are rising in much of the country, and certainly here in Oregon, raising concerns about people being forced out of their homes because of their inability to pay their property tax. And I would mention, I think it was around the time of the 2006 election when people got their ballot measure pamphlets. I got probably 10, 12 phone calls from members. And as you know, if you get 10 or 12 calls, there's a lot more, many other people out there who are thinking the same thing. And basically what they're saying was, we understand the importance of these ballot measures. We understand the importance of the programs they're trying to support as far as fire and police, libraries, and so forth. We want to support those programs, but we're afraid it's going to raise our property taxes, and it's getting to the point where we can't do it. And I think that's a good message. I mean, they understand the needs of their community and so forth, but they also understand that it's getting to the point they may not be able to pay their property tax and keep their home. And so with that kind of message, I've testified on a couple of bills last session. I'm here testifying on this bill and asking you to please keep this in mind. As already indicated, our population continues to age. This is going to be more and more of an issue, and I think local governments should be very concerned about this and their ability to pass bond measures in the future. I think the mention Senator Atkinson talking about the deferral program and something like this, I think there is a way. I mean, if you look at this bill here and how it uses age and income and the rate, percentage rate and so forth, these are all variables that are being used to limit limit the number of people who could participate or be eligible, and also limit the physical note on this bill. But by using those same type of factors, I think you can also establish a way where a circuit breaker, such as what would be established by this bill, would actually work to complement the current deferral program, so that they could work together well, certainly have the option, but the circuit breaker might be more advantageous or desirable to a particularly low-income homeowner. The deferral program might work better for a more moderate-income homeowner and so forth. So I would just ask you to keep that in mind as well. One last note related to AARP and our policy. It is our preference that when these types of property tax relief programs are considered, that the main basis that's used is income rather than strictly age or particular emphasis on age. But I also understand what we're trying to do here as far as certainly help those who are most in need and why we're utilizing age 75 here, why we're using a certain income and so forth. But I would just hope as we talk about this in the future that we would particularly look at first and foremost the ability to pay when we look at a relief program. That's it for my comments. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks very much. Bruno?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I'm Verna Porter, and I'm the current president of the Oregon Alliance for Retired Americans, and I'm also an active member of the ILW Retiree Group, which is the Longshore. It was my husband's union, and the reason I mention them, it is the reason I have the wherewithal to do many things, including be a senior activist. I sit on many health care and retiree-oriented committees and boards, and I'm blessed to be able to do so, I think. I have very strong feelings about this bill, and I consider myself a person who is in a very good place in retirement. Because of my husband's union and my retirement and Social Security, I am comfortable with my husband's union. I have widow's benefits. I also have one of the most comprehensive health care programs that there is available to retirees. That's almost unheard of. I have very often gone to a clinic or something for care and having the caregiver look at my coverage and say, well, this is unheard of. I've never seen this before. No copay? Oh, you get this? You know, yes, I'm very blessed. And this is the reason I am so willing to come here today. 25 years, I'm a retired nurse, and my specialty became geriatrics, which I loved, and so I am one, and I stayed there, and I do this. But anyway, 25 years ago, my husband and I bought our home in Northeast Portland. And when we bought it, because of my nursing experience and what I did, we bought a house that would be senior-friendly. It's a house that basically is three stories, but I checked it over to make sure that it was wheelchair-friendly, you know, that we could live on one floor and have access to everything we needed in every room. And indeed, that house is. As it did happen, my husband developed cancer about 12 and a half years before he died. And through the many surgeries and things that went on with that, he became partially handicapped. He was able to stay in our home with me. I was able to do the nursing care until 3 days before he died, because we had all of those provisions in our home. We didn't have to move. He stayed there with me. And as was mentioned before, he did live longer. He was fearful of a nursing home, and I was for him, because he would have felt depressed, and that's the beginning of the end for many, many people. I bring that home up because, as Rick and Senator Berger both mentioned, with the escalation of the prices, you know, the value of homes, my house I'm going to sell now. It is supposedly worth at least five times more than what I paid for it, which is the reason I'm selling. As I said, I'm in a very good place financially, I think, compared to other widows in this state. Though I'm not terribly much, don't have terribly much more income than that minimum, it is substantially more and puts me in the upper 25% of widows my age in this state. I'm over 70. That is still a very modest income that I have. But that modest income isn't, I am not making it. I have to keep going to my savings account because when I pay the utilities, the enormous property taxes on that house that's worth five times as much as we put into it when we bought it, and then, you know, the insurance even went up substantially. My expenses are so high, I can't maintain this. I have enjoyed maintaining it. The joke at Ma Porter's boarding house, because everybody who needed to come and stay with me for a while could, and that will end, and I will miss it. My dilemma, that with my good financial standing, I feel in this state that I have to sell my home because I can't afford to pay the taxes, alarms me a lot. Like I said, I'm in an upper 25% bracket of women, widows, my age in this state. What Senator Burdick and Rick both said is that small group of people who are over 75, who have that lower income, I have no understanding of how they can even stay in that home. It was said that they cut the pills in half. I've known of instances where it's a choice between any kind of pill, half or whatever, and something to eat. The circumstances are extremely dire. And the reason I pointed mine out is I think mine are good, and I'm having to take action. Those people don't have any choices. And so I feel that we as a state have a moral obligation to do something about that population. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have any questions per se, but I want to join the chorus of why helping particularly the lower income seniors with property taxes is a good idea. Almost more of a holistic help to even more than Project Independence and keeping people independent in their home by lowering the property tax bill. My question, though, is maybe for Mary, this population here, how do they file their taxes? Is it mostly easy forms, or how? What's the common
I think they
method?
Have to file, excuse me, Chair Burdick.
Mm-hmm. What's the common method?
I really can't answer that question. I just know the date that they have to file by, but they might have, don't know.
I just wonder, I mean, is this the kind
that
of
is, ours.
Is this a box that they check off on an easy form, or is this something that requires more sophistication than this population might?
But Senator Haas, we're going to have Deborah come up and
okay.
address that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. To Senator House's question, if they're required to file an income tax return, they're most likely filing on the Form 40 because they would have pension income to report, and that does go on Form 40. It's not on the short form.
Deborah, do you know what if you were to guess what most of this population files? Is it that kind of a form? Or
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, I would assume that if they are filing, they're filing a Form 40, probably. I would not expect very many that are required to file an income tax return would be using the Form 40-S, which is the one-page short form.
It would not?
Would not be, because they have pension income, probably, that they're reporting, and in order to report the pension income, they use that longer form.
So, if I could, Madam Chair, how would you then see this? we were to pass it into law, would this be a box on the 1040 form, or would they have to do some calculations, or how would they get here?
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, I would expect we would have a worksheet in our instructions. The taxpayer would need to do some calculations in order to come up with the amount of household income, because that's a little bit different amount generally than what is on the return itself. So we would tell them to take a number off of the return, put that in the worksheet, and then probably add back some amounts to that to come up with the household income that they need to determine on page 2, line 4. And then that amount, if it's less than the $24,999, would mean they qualify for a credit. They would need to calculate the amount of the credit based on the property tax they paid during the year. So that would also be done in the worksheet. And they get to that dollar amount and put that on the tax return as a reduction of the tax liability.
Thank you. Madam Chair, you know, that doesn't sound like any time you involve worksheets on your taxes, you're already way out of my league. And, you know, this is a population that's over 75, income less than 25,000. I doubt if they have CPAs doing their taxes. And so, you know, however this plays out, I think it's important to be cognizant of that and to make the help on your taxes easy. And, no, that's just kind of my two cents. We have some other programs where it is almost just not worth it to go through the worksheets, and by the time you hire an accountant, do it here upside down.
Madam Chair,
thank you for bringing that up, Senator Haas, Ms. Porter.
I was just going to comment to the senator's question on that. It's very valid. Every year at tax time, we put in our newsletter a list of phone numbers where seniors who don't have children, family members, can afford a CPA or, you know, an accountant, that we give them phone numbers where they can get some help, because it is too difficult for many, many of them to do. It's a big problem.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could, in response to Senator Haas' question, I agree with you as far as the worksheets and so forth, but I would mention the AARP tax aid program, and we have volunteers in every single county, and I'm sure that if this were to pass that they would be educated and be able to help with those who would be eligible with for the program.
Thank you.
Right.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might direct our attention back to the reality of the revenue environment that we find ourselves in today. The revenue impact is a negative 1.2 in this biennium, and then moves to 2.4. Do I understand that correctly?
No,
maybe you could.
It's
next biennium.
The next biennium. It has no revenue impact in the current biennium.
Well, I see here 07-09 of negative 1.2.
Yeah.
Am I misreading?
08-09, yeah.
There was a revised impact statement issued out on SharePoint. I guess it just wasn't picked up. That should be 00 if all of you have one. There should be a big revised on it. It didn't get distributed to you.
And I didn't get the revised staff measure summary either.
Okay, well, thank you for pointing that out. I think my line of thought will still persist here, however. Looking into the future, even with a negative of 2.4 revenue.
Yeah.
And I'm maybe, Rick, if you could reflect on your statement, ability to pay. And if we were to look at making this revenue neutral, what benefits to seniors could be means tested that would allow those least fortunate to have this benefit?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Morris, when I'm talking about ability to pay, I'm talking about their income, primarily Social Security, pension benefit, and so forth. Ability to pay, you determine at what level you feel is reasonable to provide a benefit, a tax relief, and so forth. I mean, to some, as indicated, $25,000 seems reasonable, but you know, $12,500 might be the line for others and so forth. That particular level is something we compromise on.
I think the question was there are other programs out there for seniors that are not means tested at all, like the prescription drug deduction, mm-hmm. for example. That's a fairly costly program,
mm-hmm.
and I think what Senator Morris was trying to get at, which I'm interested in as well, is which of those programs do you think we could put a means test on to try to get some money out for programs like this?
AARP's policy is one that is given great consideration on research. It's policy that evolves over time, and I would suggest that perhaps one time, years ago, we did focus more on the age of the individual. That policy has evolved considerably, and now we believe that is really much better policy as far as the intergenerational equity and so forth would focus on the ability to pay, whether it's this program or any other program.
You know, I think, Madam Chair, I appreciate your clarifying, because that's exactly what I was directing towards, is what can we do to implement this that would have a revenue neutral, but yet it wouldn't materially change people's lives out there that actually can afford and live very comfortably. And I think that, you know, this committee is very sympathetic to this need.
And I understand.
How do we do it in this revenue environment? That's that's the point of my absolutely comments.
To be continued, I will take your comments as a sign of encouragement. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1077. And I want to put the committee on alert. We will most likely not be able to have a meeting on Monday because we won't have any bills unless some miracle happens that I'm not aware of. So if we indeed don't meet on Monday, and I'll make sure the word gets out to you officially, then the Wednesday meeting will be critical, because that will be our last meeting to pass out House bills, at least our last official one. So with that, we are adjourned.